Okay, Google, find me a podcast about War Machine and Hordes, please.
All right, I have a podcast ready to go. Let's start with Tangential with Sung Soo.
Okay, Google, do you have any more information about the podcast?
It's a War Machine and Hordes podcast whose goal is to educate, inspire, and entertain.
Okay, Google, play Tangential with Sung Soo.
Hey guys, this is Sung Soo, and today I'm joined by Yuhan Deerland. And by today, I mean about 2 months ago. So I need to apologize, it took me a really long time to edit this one and get it out. Yuhan and I had a great conversation, it's always great to catch up with him, but this was recorded after WTC and before War Machine Weekend. Leading up to War Machine Weekend, I was just trying to grind as many games as possible, and I had some last-minute painting to do. And then honestly, after War Machine Weekend, I've had a bit of the con blues. But more on that on an upcoming podcast with Matt McWaters. Before we dive into the pod, I want to thank Muse on Minis for supporting me in all my War Machine-related forays. You can use Mile High Muse to get yourself 10% off on anything on MuseOnStore.com. Muse on Minis are purveyors of extremely high-quality wargaming products. In addition, they provide you with a podcasting service which hosts more podcasts about wargaming than any other network out there. You can check them out on MuseOnMinis.com or MuseOnStore.com. And once again, that discount code is Mile High Muse. All right, well, thank you so much for being patient with me. Without any further delays, here's that conversation I had with Yuhan. I'm joined again by Yuhan Deerland from Sweden. Yuhan recently represented Sweden for the fourth time in the WTC, and this is the return pod where we kind of see how he did with his predictions, check in with how the event went, and honestly, it was great to just catch up with a friend. Yuhan, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Having a slight cold, but otherwise I'm good. Fixing up some last parts of my Crucible Guard for upcoming events.
No, I know you were excited about Crucible Guard last time we talked, but before we get too far into this, I'm sorry, but I feel like I have to ask. So, what happened in Poland?
Yeah, it didn't go exactly as planned. Let's see. We were, aiming for a 6-1, a 6-0, and maybe planning for a 5-1, and thinking 4-2 would at least be fairly reasonable. And we ended up in a 2-4 in the end, which we are not too happy about. Let's see. So I think we actually lost a lot of wind. I think I even talked about it in last cast that it was Poland South we were most afraid of from our team. So of course going in, we are basically round one, we're hoping that we get basically whatever that isn't Poland South and hopefully something that isn't on our like top tier list in general. But perfect luck. So we have Poland South game one. So that was a bit rough start, let's say, because we were expecting them to be among the top teams, if not the winning team. And we also had pretty bad matchups into them. I feel like we were a bit slow on the ball with High Reclaimer, or mainly the Judicator. And they came in with double Manoth with a bunch of Judicators in them. So good players on top of really, really good lists. To be honest, though, we played the game, and the two Manoth games were actually the ones we won. So I managed to win my game against, I don't have the name of the player, but he played Krios 1 with double Judicator. And the other game we won was Striker 2 against Sirena double Judicator. I feel actually like Poland made a bit of a mistake. They played Mirage, so one of the fastest scenarios, and they dropped double Judicators in two of the games. And we had fairly easy, I would say, scenario wins. The other game was a bit more of a little bit of luck as well, I feel like, than mine was. But my game, my opponent didn't really make it to the flags until it was too late. And my zone, he never managed to contest. So, yeah, put out a lot of damage with the Judicators, but that's not enough if you don't contest or score. But yeah, the other three games we lost, we got a little bit of a problem into lock. We overrated that game, I think, a lot. I have played into convergence lock a few times, but the rest of my team haven't. And yeah, I think we got a bit blindsided by that. We thought the game was okay for our circle player, but it wasn't. Robin, one of my teammates, he got assassinated by a Kruger 2. He played a bit too aggressively. And Tomasz, maybe you know, the one of the Polish circle players who's been pretty prominent lately, he got the chance to try for a crit stationary with the battle engine, and it worked out, and that meant that he had a very safe assassination without risking too much. So yeah, he died, and then we had the last Crix mirror going down to the last very few minutes. I think our Crix player with Ghost Fleet got a little bit too careful. He stayed back a bit too much, which gave the opponent a bit of a scenario lead, which he then couldn't catch up with before it was too late. But there was a really, really tight game for the last deciding game that was all of us looking while it was going on. So it was, I would say, really close for us to actually beat Poland South the first game. But we didn't, so we went down into the loser's bracket. And more than just losing, I think it broke our spirit a little bit, actually. I think I can say that. Like, losing game one isn't something you want to have happen. But yeah, we have to work through it. And then after that, I feel like we ran into a bit of an easier team, I would say, game two, that we took down fairly well. And then we ran into the Norwegians, who lost to Poland South game two. So they were the second team that Poland took down, and also one of the teams we didn't want to play against. So yeah, they also managed to beat us in a fairly even game. I screwed up a bit there, I should say, as well. And then probably for day two, I would say our drinking and sleeping habit between Saturday and Sunday didn't help us too much. On top of having actually surprisingly good teams, I would say, even in the loser's bracket. So yeah, didn't work out great for us.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to hear it didn't go better for you. I was actually impressed. You mentioned in round one, you guys played against Poland. You played against Christoph. And you did, like you said, you beat both their Menov players, and that was impressive. And Bradigus into Locke, I get how that could be tricky, especially if you've never played Locke before. And I recently just died to a crit stationary from Kruger 2, 2 weeks ago at the Boker Brawl, so I know how that goes.
Yeah, things happen.
Yeah, so other than that, I mean, obviously it was a little disappointing, but how was it in general? How did it compare to other WTCs?
I think it was really good. I like it overall. Poland is always nice. It's fairly cheap, even if it wasn't to the level it's been before, because we're now in a hotel at the airport. So, I mean, airport hotels usually aren't cheap. And even for Poland, that means that the prices are only like half of Sweden, not a quarter, as they usually are. So, I mean, it's pretty nice with being able to, you know, buy some food and buy alcohol for yourself and everybody else you want to without feeling like you blow your entire budget. So that's always nice. And I think the venue was really good overall. And I feel like even the level of play is, I think, constantly stepping up in W2C. I mean, even in our, when we were 1-2 after day one, we still had to struggle to get any wins during day two. So this, idea I think we had a few years ago, where, you know, you had some easy games if you go into the loser's bracket, it's not really true anymore. The level of play is really great in almost all the field, at least. So yeah, it's getting harder and harder to get your wins, no matter which part you're playing at.
So obviously the WTC is a big social event, right? I heard a story about you ordering a ton of vodka and apple juice for everyone. Is that a common pairing? I've never heard of that before.
It's actually something. I had a Polish roommate before, and I have a few Polish friends, and it's one special kind of vodka they have. I think it's Szubrowka, if I can pronounce that correctly. My Polish friends will beat me now. But it's bison grass vodka, actually, that they usually mix with apple juice. So it's some kind of mix they have. So I went for that when I saw some offer for it in the restaurant we went to. And as I said, like, if you go to Poland, you have to buy some vodka. It's cheap enough that you can buy it for everybody and still be fine.
So how much is some vodka? Because I've heard great exaggerations, maybe not exaggerations, on how much drinking occurs at this event.
The Thursday, I think, was the, like, hardest drinking, probably. And that is, I would say, it's pretty normal. We usually try to come in a few days early, and the Thursday night is pretty good because you don't have any games going on after, and we usually head into town somewhere around WTC. And yeah, people are like more happy to drink on the Thursday than any other day, except maybe Sunday. So we went out and had a nice dinner with a bunch of people. I don't know how many we ended up being, like 40 people maybe in the restaurant. And as we are in Poland, of course, there is a vodka bar just outside the restaurant. So we got reasonably drunk in the restaurant with some vodka and too many beers. And then the best idea ever is to go to the vodka bar across the street and buy, I don't know how many bottles of vodka we had there. But 7 or 8 is probably a good estimate on like 15 people that were left or so. So yeah, pretty good amount, I would say. And we had some people being more or less carried or driven home without being really able to get there themselves. So it was an interesting experience as usual.
Yeah, I would be incapacitated if I drank nearly that much vodka. So I guess it sounds like you guys had a great time. So before we get too much further on this, like, what do you enjoy more? Do you enjoy the games and the competing, or do you enjoy the socialization of the WTC?
Oh, that's really hard. Do I have to choose? Have to choose? I think the combination is the great thing. Like, you can go and have a lot of fun and meet a lot of really nice people, and also have a really high level of competition and get some really nice games in. So I would really have a hard time to decide between them. I think it's all part of it for me. And I usually try to do these few extra days just to get some more hanging out, especially with the people from outside of Europe that you usually don't meet so often. It's really nice to have. And they are usually the ones who are there also a few days before or after, so they have some time to hang out. But yeah, I honestly don't know. Even if I wasn't on a team, I think I would still go just for the socialization. So, but yeah, I really like the gaming as well. So I don't know how to give you a good answer for that, actually.
No, that's fine. That's a perfect answer. I mean, honest answer is always the best ones. Personally, I'm trying to decide if heading over there for Solo Masters would be worth it. I think I'll apply for WTC for America, but I'm by no means favored to make it. So just, debating myself whether it's worth the money to head over there.
Yep. No, I would definitely recommend it. I think it's really great. We actually were hanging out with some guys from the US who were in the Solo Masters who came over for that. And I think it's a great way to just get a lot of socializing and also like a lot of War Machine talk just with really top level players and people from all over the world to get some different ideas. Of course, from the US, it's a lot more expensive to get there. So it's a bit of a different thing than going for me or someone else nearby. But I would still recommend it. If you have the option to go, I would really recommend to come over.
No, keep that in mind. Did you get to hang out with my buddy Danny? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, probably. Ooh, name me and names. There are too many people. But yeah, Danny sounds pretty familiar at least.
Okay.
There were two guys playing Men of the Mercenaries who were doing pretty well in the Solo Masters.
Yeah, Danny and...
Justin,
yeah. And Danny's the mercenary. All right, man. So obviously you went 4-2, is that correct?
Yes, I went 4-2.
So how are you feeling about next year's WTC? I mean, you've done it 4 years in a row now. Are you thinking of going back for a fifth?
If I can get into a team, I would really like to go. Our bad performance this year, though, probably means we only have 2 teams next year. Although we thought we would only have 2 teams this year as well, but that worked out somehow that we got a third team. So we will see. If we have 3 teams, I think my chances of getting on are pretty good. Otherwise, I feel like I have to step up my game a bit now. So we have our selection in, I think it's end of March, if I remember correctly. Could be beginning of March, actually. But yeah, I would have to get some results in, actually, between now and then. So hopefully I can hit some tournaments and get some decent results from it to secure my spot in a team again. And if I can do that, I would be really happy to go.
And I don't know the full details, but whether a team gets 2 or 3 teams comes down to a few things. You get points based on like time zone, like if your country's in additional time zones, and then you get points for your lowest ranking team. Is that correct?
I think it's your second team, actually, but okay. I'm not sure if they have changed it.
Okay, we'll have to ask the great Tim Bankey to explain it to us. Yeah. But, good luck. I hope you get to make the team, whether that's Sweden with three teams or two teams, or maybe you and I can meet in Solo Masters.
Yeah, so, I think I will definitely be there. Like, even if I wouldn't get on a team, I will be there somehow, either in Solo Masters or just, I don't know, trying to coach a team or just hang out.
You know, after talking to Chris Davies, I'm tempted to make Team Best Korea, so you could pretend to be Korean and play with me, maybe.
Yeah. I wonder if I could pull that off, but.
Yeah, we could make it. Yeah, anyone that says anything, we'll just call racist. It'll be fine. So yeah. Before we dive into your previous predictions, what was the biggest surprise of the WTC for you?
I think if you count between our last talk and now, I think High Reclaimer or the Judicator. If you talk between like going to WTC and now, I think it's SCAR 3. SCAR 3 I didn't really see as being really high up there. But she's been doing really good, actually, and in a lot of games as well, from a lot of different players. So I feel like I was a bit blindsided, at least, by SCAR 3. But I don't think we didn't play against her at all, so I can't really talk for how it would have worked out for us. But I didn't feel prepared enough for that, given how popular she was and how well she did.
No, that makes a lot of sense. We talked about High Reclaimer kind of being under the radar, just coming out with CID kind of late. SCAR 3 was a weird one. My buddy Matt McWaters kept telling me how great she was. I hadn't gotten to see her, really. So I was a little surprised there as well. Was there something particular about the list that caught you off guard, or just the performance in general?
No, as I said, I didn't see it on the table, actually, since we didn't play it. So it was more how great she did. I thought she was, you know, a decent enough Krix caster, but I didn't think she would be the best performing one by far, I would say.
Nope, that makes a lot of sense. So do you think after WTC this year, do you think there's a nation poised to surprise people in 2019?
I think it's hard to say this early, actually, because, of course, the people who I have been like scouting out now, probably we show their colors now. In this WTC, I think it's hard to already have some surprise going on. I know one of my buddies had been talking about the Slovenians doing pretty well, so maybe that could be something that's a bit off the radar. And I expect Czech to do pretty well next year as well. They are practicing a lot, those guys, but they did pretty well already this year, so I would say they are maybe already on the radars, so maybe not that big of a surprise.
Yeah, the Czechs finished 10th overall, is that correct?
Yeah, I think they actually lost their last two games, but they played the semifinals, which I think is very far from what Czech has done in previous WTCs.
Yeah, I see them as 10th. So yeah, awesome. Yeah. Congrats to them. That's a great showing. All right. So I know you were kind of grinding for WTC, and you mentioned you were excited about Crucible Guard. So now that now that you don't have to grind anymore, like, what about Crucible Guard is really exciting?
Sylvester has been the thing I've been excited for since the beginning. I think I'm still a bit more scarred by Ghost Fleet than most other people. It seems to have died out in most places. One of my most common opponents have been playing them. Yeah, played them at WTC and I've been playing them a lot. And having Explosive available with the Battle Engine and Colossal just started off as this can't be bad, and then the rest of his spell is just more and more incredible things going on, together with really, really good abilities. So I'm really looking forward to exploring mainly Sylvestro, but of course also trying to find some second list that will do well with him. Really shooty Colossal feels like something I want to get into right now. Just a lot new to explore. Like, it's not already decided what's good and bad. Like, it becomes, after a while, in most factions, you have some settlement of like what is considered good and bad, and it's hard to, or at least harder to like break out from that and do different things. But I feel like in Crucible Guard, there's still a lot of things to explore and try out. So that's always nice.
No, I mean, Explosivo on 10-inch sprays is never wrong, right? So is Scorn going to go on the shelf for the whole year, or are you just excited about Crucible Guard right now and we'll see what the future holds?
No, I don't think Scorn will go away for a whole year. We'll see. I'm taking Crucible Guard to CloudCon now, since it's the first time the Vulcan can actually be used, at least in Europe. And so I will try that out, and I will probably try it out a few more times when, you know, the full range of models is released. Like, I still need the Battle Engine and Alice mainly to get my the list I've been working on to work out. But I think I'll, like, Scorn is the thing I've been with for the longest time, so I don't think they will go away. I will just, I think, change back and forth a bit between Crucible Guard and Scorn, most likely.
No, that makes a ton of sense. So obviously Silvestro is extremely deep, right? He pretty much has answers for everything. We talked about Explosivo. He has Purification, which is incredible, and his feat is a hit fixer and a damage buff. Is there another caster that really catches your eye there, or who's your front runner to pair with Silvestro?
So right now it's Locke, mainly because of the releases available. I mean, there is only three casters available, and Lucas doesn't have Alice, which I think he needs even more than the other ones to be able to run properly. And also Lucas is, I think he's releasing maybe, or he released maybe last Friday. So I'm not even sure actually if I can pick him up in my local store yet. So yeah, right now it's Locke, but mainly because that's my only option. Later, I think Lucas is the one I've been like building for mainly. So I might try that out. But then I think Gearheart is also interesting. McKay is, I think, the only one I find a bit boring. She does a lot of damage fixing, but no hit fixing, which to me means that it's very like swingy on dice. If you get a lot of hits on her feet turn, she does really well. If you don't, she doesn't do well at all. So I'm not too excited about her. Hopefully that changes going forward. But I think it's Gearheart, Lucas, and Silvestro are the ones I'm looking mainly at. And yeah, maybe some luck depending on how the meta switches and so.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And before we move on too far, you mentioned Scorn, obviously. Scorn's been in a CID. Have you been following the Scorn CID?
Yes. That's been a bit of a problem since, yeah, I've been looking forward to try Crucible Guard for CloudCon. So I really wanted to get some games in with them between WTC and CloudCon. And then they launched a CID at the same time with the faction I am usually mostly excited about. So I had a bit of a hard time to try to get everything in, especially with like post WTC. I had a lot of things to catch up with like your work and personal life and so on. So it's been a bit interesting to try to get it in. But I got, I think, three games of CID with Scorn in during the CID. I'm really excited by the Mammoth change. I've been one of the few people who've been playing the Mammoth, I think. So I'll be really excited to try out some of my previous Mammoth lists with the new Mammoth that is both better and cheaper. So that's exciting. And then Exalted as well. We'll see where they end up. I feel like they are still a bit limited to both the Sols. But now everything is better and cheaper, more or less. So hopefully they will be good enough to be taken onto some national scenes. Hopefully we can find some nice place where they're actually a good counter into something that's good in the meta right now. But it's a bit hard to say always when everything is in flux and things change. So it's, basically I will wait and see after the CID what comes out and give some better idea about what is actually good or not after that.
Yeah, as you know, you and I have talked a bit. I'm pretty excited about Score, and they're what I'm jumping into after War Machine Weekend. And the CID has changed things a little bit for me, and I don't want to get into it too much. But yeah, it's always good to have more options, right? And the CID definitely increases the odds that some things will be playable, even if we don't know their final rules.
Yep. Yeah, it will be a wider stable of playable things in Score. That's always what we aim for, I think, with CIDs, is more things being playable and taken. It's always interesting to see more different things on the table.
Yeah. So before WTC, we were talking about Resheth as one of the strongest casters in the game. And his win-loss record was a little uninspiring at the WTC. Do you think he still deserves this moniker, or do you think we should reevaluate the man on the Palanquin?
Yeah, I was actually trying to figure out what, what went so horribly wrong. I still think he's one of the best casters. We have had some CIDs that come out really strong lately, like we have like Kolgrima and Madrak a bit further back, and then we have Anamag and now the Menoth things. So I think he isn't, like before I thought he was top 3 in the game. Now maybe he's more like a top 10 because some of the new things are really good. But I still think he's really up there and really, really good. But I'm not really sure how people do so badly with him. My main question. And I think Scorn in general, Scorn did pretty bad at WTC. And I find Scorn to be one of the better factions in the game. Even if I think the difference between factions is really small at the moment. But I find Scorn to be among the better ones, and they did the absolute worst at WTC. So I'm not sure if I'm, if people are doing something horribly wrong or if I'm overrating them by some way. I don't know. My results have been really good with them. So, and I don't think it's something like super, super deep that needs to be done to get Rashet working. It's like shoot the stuff you see and you can reach, and then shoot them a bit more, and then feet and shoot them even more. So it's not like, I don't think it's super deep, so I'm not really sure what's happening when people are doing so badly with him.
No, that makes sense. And is Rasheth really that simple? You're shooting the models they give you, and then you're just continuing to go in, and then on feet turn, you commit the turtles to melee?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, it's always like, you know, there is a scenario game, and he is a large base with no good stats. So, I mean, you have to keep him alive, and you have to be relevant in scenario, but I don't think he's among the harder casters to play to a good level, but he's one of those where you can always get even better, I think. But yeah, to get him to perform good, I don't think there is any like really deep skills needed to get to that level. So I'm not sure. We have to interview some other Scorn players to see what's going on.
Finding other Scorn players can be an issue, but maybe I'll reach out to Sarah or someone, get her on the pod.
Yep.
All right. So obviously, last episode, we did some WTC predictions. And the purpose of this was to do some follow-ups and see how you did. So are you ready to jump into this, Yuhan?
Yes.
All right. So the big one, I asked you which team, not country, which team is going to bring home the crown? And do you remember what you predicted?
I would say Poland South is what I clearly remember. Then I think I mentioned a few other ones, depending on like if we think there will be a new team that wins or not. But I would say I probably mentioned Canada and England, and maybe I'm not sure if I got Australia in there or not, actually.
Nope, didn't get Australia. You did. You guessed Poland South, Canada Beaver, and English Knights. So actually, all three of the teams you named were in the top 10. Canada Beaver came in at 9th. The Knights, I believe, were 3rd. I get the Knights and the Lions messed up. I know England was 3rd and 4th. And then Poland was 2nd.
3rd and Poland was 2nd.
So you were really close there. So you did well there. So I'll, didn't get it exactly right, but that was a hell of a guess.
Yep.
question two was, which country will have the best win-loss record as a whole? And we kind of already hit on this, but I believe you actually guessed Sweden would. Does that line up with what you remember?
That's what I remember. And I think I kind of, or my team at least, kind of ended up saying that was not going to happen. We have one team by one, so they did really well. And then we have another one at 3-3, and then we have ourselves at 2-4. So, yeah, not really in the top level there.
Yeah, a little bit of self-sabotaging. I believe England actually ended up with the best overall team performance, but I don't know that to be factual, and that data was kind of hard to glean. So definitely, we know it wasn't Sweden.
Yeah, I think Australia or England is probably there, or Poland. Does Poland have all their teams in the top? Yeah, I think Poland might be.
Poland's third team, Go West, I know was a 3-win team. And I know England's was a 3-win team. But I think England had 2 4-win teams. Oh, but Poland did too. Yeah, I don't know. We'd have to take a closer look at that. We're not going to do that calculation right now.
No. But yeah, so, probably England or Poland or Australia. and definitely not Sweden.
Yeah, so I asked you for a country that would surprise the pool this year, and I believe you guessed the Czech Republic, is that right?
Yes, I've been playing with them quite a lot during the summer. I have my girlfriend from there, so I was spending some time in Czech Republic, and I found them to do really well, and especially be very like inspired to play and really like stepping it up to try to practice as much as possible. So I thought that they had some chance to step it up a bit from their previous performance.
No, and they did great. Coming in at 10th with 4 wins is a phenomenal run from the team and the Czech Republic. So again, there's a pretty good guess there. Now we get a little more into the weeds here. Mm-hmm. So I asked you which casters would have the best win rate, and your guess was?
I think maybe I said Rachette. I'm pretty sure I mentioned Animag and Dreamer as well.
I remember Rachette and Dreamer, and you might have mentioned Animag. I'd have to go back and double-check the tape there. So Rachette obviously ended up with a 39% win rate. Does that sound right?
Yeah, so not really close.
Yeah, and we kind of already talked about that. We don't really know what happened there. Dreamer ended up doing pretty well. Dreamer was just under 58%, I think like 57.8.
Yep.
And then how do you think Dreamer is able to do so well, even though people knew what she was trying to do?
I think Dreamer is a tough nut to crack. She does a lot of things, and she can be surprisingly versatile, even if she's pretty slow and the army doesn't look like it has so many surprises. But I think she can do more than you expect, and especially these what are they called? The things she spawns when she kills other people.
Phantasms.
Phantasms, I think, are better than most people think. It's like when these beasts break, you feel like you're down to, they only have 3 models or so left in their beast break, and you're like, now I can win on scenario easily, and then suddenly there are 3 phantasms in all of your zones and flags every turn. It's a lot harder than you would think to finish off a scenario game against Dreamer, especially.
No, and Animag ended with a pretty ridiculous win rate, 64% with 100 games played, and it's the combination of those two that's really amazing. When we were talking about win rate, we were only considering casters that had more than 5 games played, because there were some anomalies like Morty 2 and stuff like that that ended up with 100% win rate. So, and then Animag, same thing. How do you think Animag did so well, even when people were specifically teching for her?
I think a big thing for Animag is she's really good on all levels. Like, it's very hard to fuck up. She does great, and you put things in the way of the other people and they don't die. So I think it's a fairly easy list to play, at least to a decent level. I mean, it's always a better player will play better with it, but I think on every level of play, she's good. She's really good for beginners and really good for really experienced players as well. So I think that's a big part of her performance, is that she does so well all over the field. Even if there are so many games and so many players, she can still pull off a lot of wins just from having basically strong stats throughout. So I think it's not super deep game needed. For a lot of games, you can just win by pure stats. And then, of course, you have a lot more with the Hellmouths and the pool spell, what is called Gallows, together, I think can catch a lot of people off guard as well on all levels. So I think she has a lot of good tools for all levels of play.
All right. And the casters that actually had the best win rate there, I believe, were High Reclaimer and Scar 3. Is that line up with what you saw?
Yes. And I'm pretty sure I sent you a message like after our cast, like a couple of weeks after, I sent you a message that where I told you that I would like to put Reclaimer on the list of casters that will do well.
I will verify that. You did, in fact, send me that message after our podcast.
Before the WTC, but after the cast. I think he was slightly on my radar when we talked, but I hadn't really got the experience of playing some games against him. But then we started playing practice games against him, and that list, the like Judicator and mix of exemplars with High Reclaimer, is really, really good. And it's, I would say, the best list in the meta right now.
Yeah, I don't like to self-promote, but Tactical Tips just dropped an episode about High Reclaimer Judicator today, if you'd like to learn a little bit about that. But while I have you on the pod, Johan, I'd love you to just quickly dig into that. So what are some things we need to have if we're going to try to play against the High Reclaim Adjudicator?
I've been trying to think about that, but basically anything that the Adjudicator shoots at will die. If it's a Colossal, he might need a little bit of help, but it's still, like most Colossals, will be close to dying from just a single round of fully loaded out shooting from Adjudicator. I think basically all battle engines are within the, like, at least in like a 40% range of dying if they get shot, if they don't have shield guards and so on, of course. But because of the blast, you can't really protect in so many ways. So, like, most battle engines go down in a turn, almost all heavies go down in a turn, and the Colossals, like, don't really go down in a turn from only that, but he always has some backup, so it's still scary. So some way to try to survive that shooting is good. Basically, blast immunity is very important. If you try to run infantry, anything with blast immunity means that they will at least not die randomly from the blasts. And even like lights and heavies die from the blast. They are POW 10 boostable with double Hand of Fate. So, I mean, it's boosted them then. I think it's a 23, like 10 plus 13 on average or something like this. So it does quite a lot of damage on almost any targeted hits. So I think the first thing you need is some way to either like protect against his shooting, maybe get some cover somehow, or block some line of sight, or have some shield guards that you can direct these shots away from your important pieces. So that's, I would say, the first thing is some shooting protection and blast protection. And then something else that's really good if you have is remove from play, and preferably in pretty high amounts because of the feat. So with Vengers coming back and charging you, they kill a lot of things if they get a charge off. So I would say especially getting the Vengers removed from play is very important, at least in the list I've been playing against the most. But basically some removed from play against the things you really want to bring back. And if you have removed from play against everything, then it's really good. But usually the errands are really hard to remove from play because of their self-sacrifice. So I would say remove from play against the hard-hitting pieces or most important pieces. And then on top of that, of course, the Adjudicator still can be either spell protected or shooting protected. So usually if you need to put in some damage onto it, you need either something that threats really far and hits really hard in melee, preferably 15 inches or more, meaning that if the Adjudicator sprays you, you can charge it. So if you have then something you can protect from shooting and then get it to charge, then it would be really, really helpful, because then, yeah, he goes in for a shooting round and then you can take down the Adjudicator, hopefully. So that can be good, or have some like magical boostable shooting that you can get into the Adjudicator through the choir buffs as well. And then even on top of that, he still has some clouds and he has some like ashes to ashes to clear. Even if you have like blast immune high defense infantry, he has some ashes to ashes he can throw out, and he has some clouds he can put down to protect some things. So I mean, even if you have a lot of things, he still has a few tools up his sleeve. So I think it's really hard to build for. I managed to either build for the Adjudicator or for the rest of the army, but I have a really hard time to build something that can handle the Adjudicator and the rest of the army at the same time.
Yeah, I personally ended up in a similar boat where I can either handle the infantry or the Adjudicator. I haven't found something that handles both well yet, so still working on that. I'll keep you guys appraised. And like I said, Tim and Pat go into some details on tactical tips if you have a chance to check out that over at facebook.com/battletips. So yeah, the other list...
Definitely be listening to that one after this cast or the coming days.
thank you again. Thanks to everyone who listened. So the other list that we kind of talked about a little bit before was Scar 3. So why do we think Scar 3 was able to hold this position down?
Oh, that's a lot harder because I haven't played against her, basically. I think, at least partly, she got a bit under the radar. I feel like especially Mark from the England Knights has been keeping her on the down low. He has been promoting the Slayers so much and talking about how Slayers are so good into everything. And I think he barely played the Slayers at WTC. He only played SCAR 3. So I think it's, I don't know if it's some combined effort of all the SCAR 3 players around, but it feels like from how popular she was and how often she was dropped, somehow people managed to not talk too much about her coming up to the event. So that's, I think, at least one part of it. People weren't really prepared for her. I also think she can build very versatile lists, so it's probably hard to like tech for her, even if she would have some better information before. She can build some different things. She can build some shooting, more shooting heavy slaughter fleets, or she can build some more melee heavy lists as well. And she can go for a colossal or for a few heavies or some stalkers or such. So I think it's, she's very versatile, and also people didn't prepare so much for her. And I think in general, like, recursion is good. Recursion is really good. That's what I think we're seeing throughout the game all the time, like with Ghost Fleet being so popular for a while, and also with High Reclaimer now and so on. Just getting bottles back all the time, or High Reclaimer gets it back a lot once, and SCAR gets a few models every turn. I think it's a very strong mechanic in general. And after Ghost Fleet dropped, the amount of remove from play in the meta has dropped a bit as well, which probably helps her out a bit. And she's also not, I would say, as like Ghost Fleet was struggling with very targeted remove from play, where you could get like the unit leaders out so they couldn't get back anymore. But she doesn't have this problem since she can just bring back whatever dies from her army. But I'm not sure if I can go so much into more detail about her because I haven't played against her yet.
That makes sense. Always better to speak from experience. I know Matt McWaters, who played SCAR 3 very well at the WTC, said she also matches up pretty well into what people normally regard as anti-Krix tech. So if people are teching for Slayer spam or P-SCAR, he thought SCAR 3 filled a good role there. So, I was surprised as well, but happy that SCAR 3 did well.
Yep.
So up next, we had you predict which faction would have the best win rate. Do you remember which factions you ended up picking, Johan?
I would say Legion and Grimkin.
You're correct. Those are what you predicted. And Legion ended up at the top of the pile with a 58.5% win rate. So great on you there. Grimkin slipped a little bit. Do you remember where Grimkin ended up?
So we have Grimkin is actually below 50%. They are at 48%.
Okay. So 1-for-2. Not a bad run.
Nope. And I think Animag was, maybe that's why I remember mentioning Animag, because it was probably mentioned during the like faction thing, even if I didn't mention her in the casters, because I thought she would be played a lot and have a fairly high win rate at least. So that's probably why I put Legion in there, and why I remember talking about Animag somehow on the cast.
Yeah, I definitely remember that coming up in the cast, and you guys can check that out. Tangential with Johan, you can catch up on that episode. I still think there's some great content in there. So what do we think ended up dragging Grimkin down? Obviously, Dreamer was extremely successful. Was it pretty much just every other Grimkin caster?
Probably yes, I would say. Dreamer usually does pretty well. I think the other ones, even if they are good in some situations, they probably aren't just as stable as Dreamer in getting their wins in. And I think it's also, it might be a bit of a, a list chicken situation, where you end up with trying to get something you think is good into what Dreamer struggles with and don't really succeed with doing that. So I would almost guess that Dreamer is played into the matchups that are considered good for Grimkin, and then the other casters are usually dropped when you feel like Dreamer isn't doing so well. So I'm not sure if it's like maybe not as much at least a thing that say that the other casters are bad. It's more that they get to play the bad matchups.
No, that makes a ton of sense. So rounding out the top four factions, we had Legion, Mercenaries, Menoth, and Circle. Are you surprised by the inclusion of Mercs, Menoth, or Circle?
No, I wouldn't say so. Circle is a bit interesting at the moment. They are, I would say, the most limited faction in the game. They have one theme that is played, I actually pulled up before WTC. I pulled up the, because Krix and Circle are above and below each other in the conflict chamber. So I pulled up the numbers of how many different models are used in Krix and then in Circle. And let's say it's a little bit depressing for Circle. So I think Circle does well. It's a bit impressive that they do so well with usually two pretty similar lists in the same theme. I feel like they should have some problems with people having something that's good into both of them, but it seems like they're managing anyway. And I'm not sure. I don't hear so many people actually teching for Circle. So maybe they are flying a little bit under the radar while still being good enough to put up some good results.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Circle really is only Bones of Ouroboros right now, but Circle has done extremely well with Bones, and I'm actually curious where Circle ends up. Like, do they distance themselves from the pack when the Tharn CID drops? And, you know, only time will tell. I'm hoping it'll drop at War Machine Weekend in just a few weeks, and we'll just kind of see where the meta settles into. But I'm a little afraid that Circle will end up being, like, head and shoulders the best. But again, I'm getting ahead of myself, and we'll just see what time brings.
I think Menoth is already up there, so maybe Circle will join Menoth. But them being above Menoth would be very hard for me to see, at least. But yeah, it will be interesting when they get a bit more differentiation to see, do people latch on to the new themes, and will Circle start to be an actual problem that people plan for in the meta?
All right, Yuhan. Well, before I let you go, I had a lot of fun with our IKEA game last time, and I was trying to think of something based around the WTC, and this is interesting what you said earlier, but you were pretty social, right? You went out, you talked to a lot of different players, you meet a lot of people at the WTC. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say so.
But you said it yourself, you're not the best with names. Is that also true?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm really bad with names, but not really great either. But usually when you meet, I don't know, a few hundred people during a weekend involved with some alcohol, then maybe the memory of each name of each person you've been talking to isn't crystal clear.
Okay, that's very fair. So I've got a list of all the 6-0 players from the WTC. And I was hoping I'm gonna tell you the player's name. And then I was hoping you could tell me the country and possibly the team he ended up representing. Maybe just country. So you ready to give it a shot?
Yeah, I'll give it a try.
All right. We'll see how well this translates to a podcast. So personal friend, amazing guy, Corey Doyle.
Oh, he should be on Canada. And excellent. I think it was some Beaver, maybe?
No, he was on Goose, but that's okay. If we get country right, I actually think that yeah. We're doing pretty well there. So next up, I don't know this gentleman. His name is Daniel Jess Dan Marl.
Ooh.
And I'm butchering that last name. M-A-I-E-R-L.
M-A-I-E-R-L. I would say he's German.
He's from Austria. He was on Austria Dandy. Okay. So.
Yep.
We have next up, we have the incomparable Jake Van Meter.
I'm going to guess that guy's from the U.S.
Yes, he's U.S. Rockefeller.
Yeah.
So next we have Martin Andre de Rome. And I, again, might be butchering your name. I'm so sorry. I'm just an American. I'm sorry.
If I hear that correctly, I think he's a Norwegian Legion player.
You were correct, yeah. And again, I am sorry for saying that name so wrong. Now we have a robot sent from the future to teach us how to play War Machine. Pat Dunford ended up going 6-0.
I'm pretty sure he played for England, and I would say England Lions.
You're correct on both accounts. We have a Mr. Peter Bates, finally, a name I can pronounce.
Peter Bates. I think the Bates guys are normally Australian.
Wow, excellent. Yep, he was with the Flaming Galahs. And I know I'm saying that wrong. I'm sorry, Chris Davies. And this one, I am so sorry. I'm going to try my best. I believe it's pronounced Stian Engribestrum. The name is S-T-I-A-N. And the last name is, I'm sorry.
I think it might be another Norwegian.
It is. Yeah, he's from Norway. So. Only two more players left. You've actually done surprisingly well at this, Johan. So we have William Cruikshanks.
Billy Cruikshanks is in Scotland. And Scotland, Brno, I would say.
Brew is actually what I have listed here.
Yeah, brew. Yeah, maybe.
And then the last one.
I need to remember what the soda is called.
The last one, and it has to be something that's hard to pronounce. I'm sorry. It's I'm going to call it Woot, W-O-U-T, and then Marschlag, M-A-E-R-S-C-H-A-L-C-K.
He's Belgian.
He's Belgian. Okay, so you did. I think
probably really sweet, salty, and sexy.
Yes. He's central chocolate. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was incredible. Did you get any of them? No, I think you got them all right.
No, the Austrian guy I thought was German.
Oh, okay. You're right. But that's, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, Johan, it was great catching up with you again. I had a lot of fun recording this. I look forward to hearing about how your Crucible Guard adventures go, and good luck at CloudCon coming up, man.
Yeah, thank you. And it was really nice to have me on, and I wouldn't say, like, really good job on the technical tips. I really liked the first episode, and as I said, I will listen to the second one. It just dropped now when we're recording this, more or less. So I'll listen to that, and I'll be really interested to see if I can learn something new into High Reclaimer.
Thank you so much. Again, I have to credit Tim and Pat for most of tactical tips. But thank you again, Johan. And maybe we'll make Team Best Korean together. Take care. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Bye.